Pop Spotting 190.
Friday, January 6th, 2012.
Welcome to Pop Spotting. I'm Jen.
And I'm Ryan.
It's Feedback Friday, where listeners take center stage.
This week, we've got some movie talk, some overdue book talk, and yes, you've still got some musicals on your mind. Let's start with movies and Vicky in Illinois.
She writes, over the holidays, I saw a lot of movies, and one of them was the new Sherlock Holmes movie, which I loved. I really liked the first movie, but I think that this one was the better of the two. Jared Harris made such a great villain in Moriarty, who is Sherlock's mental match in every single way. I thought he made a better villain than Mark Strong's Lord Blackwood, who mostly used simple trickery to outsmart Holmes and Watson in the first film, but wasn't really much of a match for them. Moriarty is definitely more crafty and certainly malevolent. I do love how well Jude Law and Robert Downey Jr. work together, and I think that they make a great pair as Sherlock and Watson. The only real negative thing that I have to say about the film has to do with the score. I've noticed that Hans Zimmer, the composer, has a tendency to be a little heavy-handed with the music at times during the action sequences. Zimmer has been the composer for the last Pirates of the Caribbean movies, and I have noticed the same thing in those films as well. Overall, I really enjoy the film and think that the ending set up nicely for another one. It will be interesting to see where the writers can take this famous duo next.
Well, there's definitely going to be sequels, whether you liked it or not. And yes, thanks for reminding us about Lord Blackwood and Mark Strong. So obviously Moriarty and Jared Harris, much more memorable there.
Well, yeah, of course. I don't remember a single thing about Lord Blackwood or what his aims were or when what ended up happening in the film, really.
But as Hans Zimmer, I mean, we talk about him quite a bit. I mean, we're movie score fans, and he's not a subtle composer. I think a lot of the time it's too much for
sure. He's possibly my least favorite score
come
composer.
On. He's had some strong ones. I mean, Rain Man was where I first became aware of him. He worked on Lion King, which is, you know, a really well-regarded soundtrack. But yes, I would say that, like, when he partnered with Jerry Bruckheimer, I mean, big, loud director, big loud composer, perfect match. So yes, the Pirates movies he did, The Rock and Pearl Harbor, and well, and Gladiator and Dark Knight, Inception. We talked about the music in Inception.
Yeah.
Not subtle, but very memorable, a key part of the film. And he even did the soundtrack to Kung Fu Panda 2, which we've been watching over and over again.
Yeah.
And I don't mind the music. So Zimmer has his strong points, has his weak points, probably was distracting in the Sherlock Holmes film, but not the only person to write in about that movie. Robert from San Francisco sent an email and said, "This is for Jen. Go with your gut. I could tell you really didn't like Sherlock Holmes, A Game of Shadows, but as the podcast went on, you unwillingly started to agreeing with Ryan, that cad." I added that part. "The movie was just rated as the worst movie of the year by the San Francisco Chronicle. They wrote, quote, 'Not a Game of Shadows so much as one of smoke and mirrors, Guy Ritchie's semi-annual attempt to distract audiences from his inability to direct actors, inflect a narrative or tell a story, used slow motion effects, crazy cutting, and strange camera angles on the way to serving up an incomprehensible story and the worst performance of Robert Downey Jr.'s career. Why even make a Sherlock Holmes movie if you're great detective deduces nothing, has no exuberance, and takes no pleasure in his own intellectual virtuosity," unquote. "Thanks for Pop Spotting, though. Love all the variety. I'm a longtime listener and Hawaii visitor." So first of all, is Robert picking up on something there? Was there a deep-seated dislike of this film and I just sort of bullied you into giving it a higher score?
No, I didn't hate it. It was fun. It was, you know, it's not Gone with the Wind or anything,
no.
but it was okay.
I can see noisy and obnoxious. I probably was, you know, I did like it more than you. And so maybe when that conversation got going, I dragged you along. I certainly didn't think it was the worst film of the year, but that's quite a review there from the San Francisco Chronicle. Robert did add, by the way, that he's a big fan of the island of Kauai and Hanalei Bay, and the North Shore says we have to get out there. And I think it's the only island that you've not visited. So
yes, it is the only island I've not visited.
We're going to have to check it out and maybe do a Kauai show as well. Now on to another movie, probably a better movie, that came up during our Golden Globes discussion.
Emily in Birmingham writes, "I could not remember if I had heard either of you talk about The Help, either the book or movie. Maybe there's been more buzz about this in the South, as that is where the story takes place. At any rate, I read the book prior to watching the film, and both were excellent, although the books are better and more detailed, and as is usually the case. The story takes place in Jackson, Mississippi in the 1950s, I believe, and is about the African-American maids and their Caucasian employers. I really like that it explored these relationships and provoked empathy without being pushy about taking a side, but rather exploring the equality that actually existed, but that wasn't acknowledged at the time. Thanks for everything you do in your show. I really enjoy listening.
So yes, The Help is a film that we did not catch up with in 2011, but certainly it has caught a lot of notice. For me, it was just sort of in the periphery of my vision. I mean, I remember seeing maybe a few commercials, a lot of morning show talk about it. I actually thought it might have been a made-for-TV movie at some point. It didn't really strike me as a big motion picture event. I'm not even sure how long it played here.
No, it seemed like it played here in Honolulu for a very short period of time, and the only real notice it seems that it's gotten is award nominations. I have yet to really read a review of it or anything.
Yeah, well, of course, for those awards, it's doing pretty good. The Golden Globe nominations there are several for The Help: for Best Picture, for Best Actress with Viola Davis, and two for supporting actresses in this film, Jessica Chastain and Octavia Spencer. So something that we might want to check out. I mean, you're from the South. Maybe you can tell me how accurate or inaccurate it is. And of course, you can also read the book that came out in 2009.
Sure.
And many people I've read say the book is definitely better than the film. But, you know, again, some good familiar faces. Even Allison Janney is in the film, so yeah, we might want to check that out. Since we started talking about books, let's stay on that tack. And we got an email from a new listener, Holly, who writes, "Just found your podcast on iTunes. The podcast certainly makes my daily commute more interesting. I've just finished listening to the David and Amy Sedaris episode. Both of them sound very interesting. I'll definitely put them on my reading list. It also reminded me of Bill Bryson. I don't know if either of you have read his books. I like the ones where he researches a topic better than your average travel book. The one that I started with is called The Mother Tongue. It's all about the English language, but the oddball stuff that's not covered in language arts class. The other book that I really enjoyed is called A Short History of Nearly Everything, which is about the quirky side of science. It's the kind of book that makes you chuckle and put a smile on your face. Keep up the good work." So first of all, Holly, always good to welcome a new listener into the fold. And do you know anything about this author, Bill Bryson?
No, I actually hadn't heard of him, but his stuff sounds really interesting. I'm a big fan of the book Eats, Shoots, and Leaves by Lynn Truss, and
right,
it sounds
right.
Like it's a little bit similar.
Well, anything that explores the English language I'm totally into. It sounds right up my alley, and especially if it's funny or interesting. You know, I did see the reviews. I mean, he's criticized a little bit for repeating urban legends and jokes about the English language as fact. I mean, we already know that our English language is weird, but not all of those are necessarily true. But the short history of everything looks really interesting. I mean, and I'm all for accessible and witty science education. And I should mention that he's got a new book out that came out in October called At Home. It's very well received, and it covers the history of the odd things he found around his house. You know, basically a history of modern domestic life.
Wow.
So we're probably going to check out some Bill Bryson. Thanks for the recommendation, Holly. Let's hear from Brooke in California.
She writes, "The David Sedaris episode reminded me of my all-time favorite Sedaris story, and it's also seasonal. Have you checked out the story essay 6 to 8 Black Men? I know it was
yes,
originally published in Esquire magazine, but I don't know if it's been published in any of his collections. The essay is about his travels in Holland and his discussion with a Dutch friend of his about the differences between the American Santa story and the Dutch Saint Nick story. It's laugh-out-loud funny. I highly recommend listening to the story rather than reading it. I find I enjoy all of Sedaris' work on audio a little more. His delivery is just so perfect."
And good to hear from you, Brooke. And yes, hearing Sedaris' voice is a big part of the charm. It
yeah,
was fantastic
it is.
Seeing him live. And yes, 6 to 8 Black Men, I think that's on the Live at Carnegie Hall album. But as with most of this kind of spoken word stuff in particular, you can also just find it on YouTube. You can mm-hmm. Google it. And I kind of liked that story. It reminded me of when we talked about Anthony Bourdain.
Right.
He did the story. He had his Christmas special, and they were talking about, like, what's the pooping log?
Krampus.
And, oh, yeah, Krampus. And some of the really disturbing Christmas stories and traditions out there. The other companions, the sometimes darker companions of Saint Nick. So you might want to Google that. That's also on YouTube as well, the Krampus story. It was cut from his TV special for being a little too, I think, edgy. But, of course, we thought it was hilarious. Another email from Justin Yates. Yates. Wow, an old friend of ours.
Hey, actually, Justin.
he designed the website, the logo for the transmission way back when. And he writes and says, "Aloha, long time no talk. I just wanted to send you a quick message to let you know about a new book I just finished called Michael Vay, The Prisoner of Cell 25 by Richard Paul Evans. It's being touted as the new Twilight or Harry Potter, except it doesn't have magic or vampires. It's a great story meant to be completely told over several books for young adults. Maybe you and Jen or even some of your older kids would appreciate it. Just wanted to mention it and let you know since I know you guys are all about new stuff." So that sounds, it looks really intriguing. I looked it up. Had you heard about this Michael Vay book, this storyline?
I hadn't heard about it, but it does sound intriguing. And I'm always on the lookout for new young adult ever since I got into the Hunger Games trilogy. I'm really fascinated by the stories told for young adults now.
Well, I mean, I think that's kind of becoming our niche on this podcast right now in terms of, you know, young adult books that adults will like. And I think that this story, this Michael Vay, Prisoner of Cell 25, is certainly in that category. This author is actually best known for a story he self-published back in 1995 called The Christmas Box. It was just sort of circulated among friends until it became so popular, people were trying to order the book, and it eventually got published. So I also love kind of those stories as well. There is an audiobook, Justin mentions, if you want to listen to it as well. But sounds like a pretty good young adult recommendation. A kid who finds out he's got superpowers and finding other kids that are like him, right up my alley for sure. So if you've read this book, we'd like to know, you know, if you've enjoyed it or if you've got other young adult recommendations for both my wife and my daughter.
Bonita in Atlanta writes, "I recently read The Host by Stephenie Meyer. I enjoyed the overall story, but I wish she would have trimmed it up a bit more. I hope she never again writes the line, 'He is so beautiful,' or at least comes up with a more interesting way to convey the same information. By the way, I only managed to read Twilight and didn't get caught up in the Twilight series. It was okay, but I had heard this was better. It is, in my opinion, but not that much."
Well, that's a great review. Stephenie Meyer, you know, again, it's, we even mock a little bit. I think it's sort of the Comic-Con rivalry coming out there, too. but yes, I mean, I've heard that The Host is better. It's called her first adult book, you know, not a young adult novel, not like what we were just discussing. And it's a sci-fi story rather than a vampire story. The only thing that makes me hesitant is that some people had described the Twilight novels as a vampire story for people who don't like those other vampire stories, which to me are the superior vampire stories. And so they're saying that this is a sci-fi novel for people who don't like sci-fi, and well, that doesn't describe me at all. But all right, you know, thanks for the review for sure, Bonita. And if there are other fans of Stephenie Meyer out there, please defend her and let us know where we might be prejudging this sort of thing. And you know, what do we know? I mean, this book was already optioned for a movie. They're going to be starting on filming it next month. Andrew Niccol is going to direct it. You know, he's done some decent stuff to come out in March of 2013. I am sure it's going to make $1 billion. And The Host is supposed to be part of a trilogy, so there's more of that to come as well. Now, let's turn to the voicemail.
Hey, Ryan and Jen. This is Maggie from Northern Virginia. Calling in with belated Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. And to be back. Woohoo! Really belated leftover from the musical. Rent and Wicked, totally amazing. Rent is much better on the stage than the film, but I love the music and love the actors in the movie because most of them are original from the stage. So, love it that way. Wicked is just amazing. And then the one that I haven't heard anybody mention is Your Good Man, Charlie Brown. We did that in my high school, Your Good Man, Charlie Brown, and I really fell in love with it then. And the revival in like 1999 or so had Kristen Chenoweth and, I knew more people before I started talking, but a few other people. But Kristen Chenoweth was Sally, and I really love Your Good Man, Charlie Brown. There's a really fun one that Sally does. My New Philosophy, where she's speaking philosophies like, you know, no, I can't stand it, different cliches. It's a lot of fun. Another thing I wanted to mention, thank you for talking about holiday music, and Sugarland has a Christmas CD. I love Sugarland, but I did not know they had a Christmas CD. And after listening to your podcast, I went and downloaded it, and I love it. And I really love their original songs. I love the regular Christmas ones that most CDs have, but I love their original songs. The green and gold one was really good. And I did see Sherlock Holmes, Book of Shadows. I really enjoyed it, but I really enjoyed the first one too. So I thought it was a lot of fun, which is what those movies kind of are. And I just love Robert Downey Jr. And Jude Law as a bickering married couple. I just love those two characters. So I will talk to you guys later. Merry belated Christmas and Happy New Year. Bye-bye.
Thanks for your call, Maggie.
Yeah, Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year. Wow, you're a good man, Charlie Brown. That one didn't even occur to me, even though it was on our TiVo recently.
Well, the animated version. Right. I guess that's based on this musical from 1967, but I hadn't even thought about it. I hadn't even remembered that it was a stage production. But yeah, you know, high schools do it. It's very basic and sparse. It's just the stage. So, you know, it doesn't require a lot of production. And this revival sounds fantastic. Yes, we're fans of Kristen Chenoweth, but I think some of the other names that Maggie was looking for include B.D. Wong from the TV cop show.
Law and Order SVU.
Yes, that's right. He's done other stuff as well. Anthony Rapp, who was well known for Rent on Broadway before doing this revival, and even Roger Bart, who had bit parts on TV like Desperate Housewives and was the voice of Hercules in that Hercules animated film.
I didn't know
so
that.
So a lot of great folks involved in that revival, and I think I'm going to probably have to check that one out. A fan of Sugarland, you know, your recommendation there, and their original Christmas music.
Yeah, I've yet to hear most of the album, but I just really loved that one track so much that I wanted to pass it on.
And here's someone who thought that Sherlock Holmes wasn't that bad. In fact, she enjoyed it because, and I think, you know, as she said, that's sort of what these films are. They're mm-hmm. big, dumb fun, and that really worked for her. But thanks, Maggie, for covering a lot of territory there. Since you brought us back to musicals, among other topics, we have a little admonition here from Cassie.
She writes, "Hey, gang, your podcast on musicals sort of frustrated me. Uh-oh. I've made my hobby to study the musical, and I found in most cases the stage work is so much better than the film. By the time it becomes a film, it's rewritten, songs are dropped, it's been reorchestrated, and so on. And I'm afraid I'm going to have to rip Andrew Lloyd Webber here. Sure, he writes a good melody, but to many, he writes tunes that are derivative of classical works and tunes from operas. To mention Sondheim and Webber in the same sentence is to disrespect Sondheim, who to me is the master. There's been great musicals going back to the 1920s. Showboat changed the way musicals were presented, and before Mr. Rogers met Hammerstein, he had a wonderful string of shows with Lorenz Hart. Great shows of the Gershwins, musicals like Chicago and Cabaret, are two great ones for me. Camelot, My Fair Lady, The Music Man, Oklahoma, The King and I, Carousel have all made pretty good films. I love the cast albums, too. To have the cast album is a great historical reminder of this show as its creators conceived it."
And for sure, you know, again, we certainly aren't as well-versed in musicals. And, you know, I think we admitted that Andrew Lloyd Webber is sort of pop musicals. And,
yeah.
You know, he's certainly not the Shakespeare of musicals. Just a lot of fun there. I mean, certainly there's some great history. Sondheim, for sure. Rodgers and Hammerstein, you know, part of our trivia yesterday. So, you know, it's in our mind. And, you know, overall, you certainly didn't get any, disagreement from us that obviously the original or the stage play is better than what you get in a film or what you get on a soundtrack. Oh, and on that point, you know, you don't call it a soundtrack unless it's to the film. Otherwise, you have to talk about a cast recording.
Yeah.
All of these things we're going to learn, but we appreciate Cassie up there in Seattle keeping us on the straight and narrow. Finally, for today, we got an email from Rob who writes, "I just listened to Pop Spotting 168 and got chills when you recounted the story about you two being at the Phantom of the Opera. I have a similar story. I went to see Bon Jovi at the Syracuse Carrier Dome in the late 1980s. When I met my future wife 3 or 4 years later, I found out that she was just across the dome at the same show. These stories seem like something out of a little show we all know and love. I wonder how many of your listeners have similar stories. As for musicals, my favorite is Wicked. Just thought I'd share. I love the podcast. Please keep it up as my commute to work has gotten longer." So thanks, Rob.
Thank
you. Glad you like that story. And, you know, I love those sort of misconnections that later turn out to be really cool, like people who live in the same neighborhood their whole lives before meeting and getting married.
Yeah, I love stories like that.
So if you've got any to share, I mean, those would be kind of cool to compile. We'd certainly like to hear how your life might have been like a Lost season one flashback. Send in those stories. Send in more suggestions, recommendations, even disagreements in our use of terminology. We love it all. Your feedback is, well, for one, what makes these Friday podcasts possible, but it is still overall the fuel that powers Pop Spotting. Now, for next week's Feedback Friday, we do have some early returns on David Fincher's The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, and we also hopefully will get more of your best of 2011 picks, and of course, anything else that you've got on your mind, just send it in.
Whether you agree or disagree with what we have to say about movies or books or games or whatever, we really hope that you'll take the time to let us know and allow us to share it on the show.
You can leave a voicemail at 815-310-0808. You can email us at feedback@popspotting.net, or you can comment on our blog at popspotting.net.
You can also post your thoughts on the Pop Spotting page on Facebook at facebook.com/popspotting, and you can also connect with us on Twitter at twitter.com/popspotting.
Now, if you like podcasts as much as we do, you know it's sometimes hard to keep up with them all, and syncing files can be a real pain. Fortunately, there's Stitcher Smart Radio. It's a free app for iPhone, Android, and other smartphones that lets you easily stream the latest episode of your favorite podcast, including Pop Spotting.
We'll be back soon with more Pop Talk. For now, we want to thank Dan Pashman of The Sporkful for making our theme song.
And we want to say thank you all for listening to our little show that's Pop Spotting. For Pop Spotting, I'm Ryan.
And I'm Jen.
Aloha.